It's a baby dedication day. We've been on a sermon series kind of going through the Bible. We're taking a break from that today, and we're getting a late jump into the message, which might trickle over a little bit at the end. But we want to talk about baby dedication today. We just did a whole dedication. We had six little ones up here, five households. Why do we make a big deal about baby dedication? Why do we do that? And of course, you know, we talk about some of the reasons. It's really a parent saying, I'm going to hope to, by God's grace, to show my child that they are loved by him and by, you know, by us, and aim them towards a faith that will guide their life. And we want to pray and honor that and celebrate the births and celebrate the little ones. But there's another reason why we make a big deal about baby dedication. And that is because it's also our church saying to each other, we see you, we know who you are, and we are here for you. There's an old slogan that was kind of made popular again in the 90s for probably political reasons by somebody, but it's a great statement. The statement goes like this: it takes a village. It takes a village. Now, what does that mean? Well, I mean, who knows what it meant to some people and what they, you know, how that could have been interpreted or applied or weirdly applied. But the statement's good. The statement's true. That none of us are self-made. When people say they're self-made, I always cringe and think, who are we, you know, we all have input. We all need community. There's somewhere along the lines things have shaped us, and people along the way, whether they're intentional or unintentional, shape our journey. And it takes others. It takes a community. It takes a church. The church is so much more than just the songs we sing and the messages we hear and the time to focus on God. It's a group of people who come together on that journey to support each other. And it does, especially for young families raising kids. Oh my goodness, have mercy. It sure is good to have a team. And sometimes that team is your parents because they live close by, or your cousins. I mean, some kids, they know their aunts and uncles or their grandparents very well. Others, they are in some place where they need other support. And some get both. But it sure does take others to help us along the way. You see, one of the big words we use at Lighthouse Church all the time is kind of in our DNA here, is we use the word for. You've seen us use that before. For. What does for mean? For means so many things. We often say that we are for Cedar Lake. Not that we're not for Crown Point, St. John, or Lowell. It's just that the church is in Cedar Lake, but we are for where we are. We are for the communities we live in, wherever that's at. And we are for people, because God is for people. Now, the long version of that statement we use is that it says that for far too long, the church has been known for what it's against. We want to be known for what we are for. We are for Cedar Lake. We are for our communities. We are for people because God is for people. And again, we want to be known for what we're for more than what we're against. And so, for is a big idea, and it applies outside and inside the church. It applies in our community as we plug into our schools and local businesses and people around us. It applies inside our church as we are for each other all over the room. In our 9 o'clock, 10:45 service, we're for each other. Those online, we're for each other. So, in a while, I'm going to look at a scripture with you, and then we're going to look at four ways to be for people, especially these young families today. Before I do, I want to say a couple things about being for before we move on. First, let me say this, that for starts with the heart. For starts with the heart. In other words, if I'm trying to be for people because it's a good idea, but my heart's not right, I'll struggle. So you got to start with the heart. And the problem sometimes is humans is we're like, you know what, Arlen, here's my problem. I don't like people. Okay, don't raise your hand. But, you know, sometimes we're that way, and it could be for 1,000 reasons. Maybe we're introverts, or maybe we're insecure about ourselves, and so we don't have to be vulnerable. Sometimes it's because if we parse it down, some people might say, I don't like people because they're different than me, you know? Like, you know, they think differently, they have different political views, they have different religious views, they have different faith packaging. They have different personalities. They raise their kids differently than I would. They have different marital relationship or way they interact. They have a different they have different laugh. Weird. They talk more than I do. Strange. They talk less than me. Odd. You know, they handle things differently than I would handle them. They're just different. People are weird. So I don't like people because they're different. And I want to say to you, that's a good thing. That's the value. That's the value, folks. I mean, how boring would the world be if we were a bunch of clones running around just like each other? Some of the really particular people would like that because everything would be just right. We'd have other things to gripe about, I guess. But no, that's a good thing. Folks, the fact that people are different, that in the bag of Skittles that is humanity, there are many flavors, is a good thing. That is not a bug, that is a feature. And the key to that is for us to just like it. I really think it's one of those areas where you flip a switch in your brain that just says, I'm going to move from disliking things because I'm insecure about myself or others. And I'm just going to say, I'm different, you're different. Cool. Instead of being irritated by it, I'm intrigued by it. I want to hear more. I don't want to fix it. I just want to listen and understand why we're all so unique. And so it's a heart thing. Four starts with the heart. But here's the thing. Four might start with a heart, but let me say that four doesn't stop there, right? It goes into action. And I know that's where it gets tricky because sometimes people need help that you can't provide. Or maybe you think, well, because they're different than me, they did things differently, that's why they need help. I don't want to enable that. Or someone's manipulative, they expect me to help them. I understand all the reasons why we can't always do everything or should not always do everything. But sometimes those reasons become our excuse to do nothing. And we should always look to do as much as we can because four starts with the heart, but four doesn't stop there. Because here's the deal. If I'm for you, then I'll be there for you. These five words I swear to you. You say, who said that, Arlen? That was John. Oh, you mean St. John the Apostle? No, I mean St. John the Bon Jovi. Yeah, I'll be there for you, okay? That's what I'm talking about. So, I mean, listen, we want to be for. Now, it's interesting, as we read the scriptures, as we read the Christian writings, we find out that there's a lot of talk about this. That the early church, when you read, and when I say the Christian writings, by the way, let me just preface. When I say the Christian writings, I refer to what some of us call the New Testament or the New Covenant. The Christian writings, the story of Jesus' life in the church that came out. You have, of course, the Old Covenant, Old Testament, Hebrew writings. But I'm talking about the Christian writings. The early church and the apostles who walked with Jesus, they spent a lot of time talking about how we're supposed to get along with one another. And you know who they got that from? They got that from Jesus when they were with him. Because when Jesus was together, he modeled it. And on his last night of earth before he was crucified, he met in an upper room with his closest disciples, and he said to them, I'm going to give you a new command. You are to love one another. And here's how he explains it. Just as I have loved you, the way you've watched me model love and the way that you're going to see me do it on the cross and in the empty tomb and going forward, I have loved you, you love one another that same way. And so the early church figured this out. The apostles wrote about how to treat one another. In fact, there's a whole bunch of one another teachings and one another commands in the Christian writings. There are dozens of them. I'm not going to read them all. We'd be here for a long time going through all of them. I picked 12 of them, not the best 12, but just an easy 12 to show you a small sample size of a bunch of things in the Christian writings. Here are 12 of them on the screen. They teach us to love one another, to honor one another, to live in harmony with one another, to build up one another, to accept one another, to care for one another, to serve one another, to forgive one another, to be patient with one another, to be kind to one another, to comfort one another, and to encourage one another. That's just 12 quick, each of those could be a message in themselves today, couldn't they? And there's dozens of those. And it's all built upon what Jesus taught them to do as we go forward. That's what the church is supposed to be. A one another place where we know how to one another, if that makes sense. And even though we're different. In fact, the thing that brings us together sometimes is only our faith or at least our exploration of faith. Think about this. We're all over the place in this room. We have different interests. We have people who, again, have different political leanings than each other, different religious expressions than each other, different faith constructs in some ways and how they see things, different preferences, different tastes. We have people who have different kinds of relationships, different personalities, different sports allegiances. How terrible is that? Or some of them don't even like sports. How even more terrible is that, you know? And we're all over the place. But you know what brings us together every Sunday? It's that all of us on some level are saying, I'm leaning in towards God and towards the idea of God. I'm on a faith journey. We have people who are agnostics. We have who come here regularly. We have people who are you know, very new to faith. We have people who've been around a long time and feel they know it all. We have people who have been around a long time and are starting to doubt some things because that's how life goes. And wherever we are, we show up to say, I'm leaning in. Every week we come together and say, I am beginning a brand new week. Wherever I am on my journey, saying, I want to start this week by leaning towards faith and leaning towards God and trying to figure out what that looks like in my journey. And that's the thing that brings us all together on a Sunday morning. No matter where we are in that process, that's the common thread. And so we come and we say, look, we're different sometimes, the Skittles of life, right? But guess what we are? We are common in that area, and we can support each other, and we can support one another. Now, I'm going to show you one passage of Scripture in just a moment here that talks about this. Instead of looking at 12 or 25 or 40 of them, we'll look at one. And it was from the Apostle Paul writing to the churches of Galatia. When I say the churches of Galatia, Galatia was an area, a big area where Paul spread the good news. When we use the term in church, someone preached the gospel. That's just a good church word. Gospel means good news. So preaching the gospel means spreading the good news. So as Paul spread the good news that God loves people and gave his life for them and reached out to build a relationship and do the hard part for us, as he spread that good news and people responded to that good news and began to gather in local faith communities all over the area, including all over Galatia, Paul later wrote a letter to these believers. And one of those letters is written to the Christians of Galatia. We call it the Book of Galatians, or the letter of the Galatians. And at the end of that letter, here's what Paul said to the church. Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, he says, share each other's burdens. There's another one another. Share one another's burdens. And in this way, obey the law of Christ. That the idea is that at different stages of life, we have different burdens. Sometimes we feel very self-sufficient. I'm strong. I'm on top of my world. I don't need anything. Other times we need help. We need support. We need, you know, encouragement, prayer, literal help. So at different stages of life, we want to share each other's burdens. Now, the next verse, he's very pointed, just warning you ahead of time. Verse 3, he says, if you think that you are too important to help someone, you're only fooling yourself. You're not that important. Ouch, Paul. Easy, tiger. Shots fired, okay? No, but he's like, look, never get to the spot where you're like, do you know who I am? Do you know who I am? You know, like I'm too big. No, no matter where we are, we might not be able to do everything for everybody. We may not be able to fix every situation. But you know what we can all do? We can all help somebody. We can all help in some way. And looking for ways to share each other's burdens. So before we're done, I want to take a couple of moments to talk about four ways that you can be for really anybody, each other, but I especially want to focus it towards these families that we met on stage today, because they could use the help. That's a crazy stage of life. Four ways to be for these families at this stage of life. This applies beyond these families, but I'm going to use that as the catalyst today. Four ways to be for each other, and for them specifically today, both parents and children. Here we go. Number one, pray for them. Now, I know that's the church thing to say, like, oh, of course, you're going to say pray for them. So moving on, right? But do we do that? Or is praying for someone just a cliche? I'm praying for you. I haven't and won't, but I'm praying for you, you know. It's just something I say. Or we look at situations that are tough and we say, oh, thoughts and prayers, meaning I don't want to do anything else, so I'll just toss out a cliche, right? I mean, literally pray for them. Write some names down. Take some time. And I wonder how, if we were really honest here, how many of us have prayed for someone else around us in this room today, or pray for other people in general today, or this last week, or this last month. It's so easy to get busy in life, but pray for each other. Now you say, I know, Arlen, because God answers prayer. Yes, we believe prayer is effective and brings results. That's a big, deep conversation. And that's the main reason we pray for people, but it's not the only reason. You know, another reason to pray for people is because it does something for us and for our heart. You know, it's really hard to hate someone you pray for, right? I mean, when I say pray for someone, if you don't like someone in the world, try this, pray for them. I don't mean pray against them, God, fix them, get them. I don't mean that. I mean pray for them. Like, God bless them, give them a good day, guide them. And when you have people around you in the church that you kind of know or barely pass, if you write their names down and pray for them, it'll do so much for you and for them. God, bless these little ones. Help them to grow up healthy and strong and safe and protected. Have good lives and good quality of lives and be wonderful adults with a great future. God, bless these parents as they guide their children and bless them, encourage their hearts. Give them strength as they raise these little ones. Give them strength. Give them peace in the process, right? Give them joy in the journey, right? Give them fulfillment through their family as time goes on. God bless these people. And when you pray for them and you know certain things that you're praying for specifically, I would encourage some of us to take the names that we met people down today and others' names, write them down so you don't forget them, and have a scheduled time. Maybe it's daily, maybe it's weekly, maybe it's some other frequency where you schedule time to sit down, pull those names out, and pray for others and pray for these families that we're honoring today. They would appreciate that. Number two, encourage them. Encourage them. This is encourage them with your words. This is the contrast to discourage them with your words, which is what some people do. Did you know parenting is hard, right? You all know that. I mean, I'm like, duh. You know, it's so neat. People come up, they're like, hey, I have a baby. We're expecting a baby. And you're like, that's awesome. Congratulations. And some of us with teenagers are like, huh, that's awesome. Congratulations, you know. Good luck. No, you're like, hey, that's great. It's awesome. But it is a ride. Like, you have no idea. It's like getting on the roller coaster, just chugging up. What have I done? You know, this will be great. So, we want to encourage them, right? And here's a way you do that is what you say. You know, anyone struggles to get to church. It's a crazy ride just to show up sometimes, especially when you got little ones. It's hard when you got to get out the door yourself. Some of us, the alarm clock is an obstacle. The wardrobe's an obstacle, you know. Something's an obstacle, right? But then for others, it's like all the little ones, right? I mean, listen, husbands and dads, it's hard to sit in the hot car and honk the horn while your wife's coming out with all the kids. Just kidding. Don't do that. That's a joke. Probably too true. But anyhow, no, I mean, it's hard to get to church. And when you find a way to get there, maybe you're glad to be there. Maybe you're excited to show up. Maybe you're having a hard day. But when you get there, whether you're on top of the mountain or below the mountain's on top of you, when you show up to church and someone scowls at you or looks disapprovingly, that doesn't help. Or when they say something to you like, your kid, you should do better with your kids, well, that doesn't help. And I don't think that happens very often, ever, hopefully here, but I'm just reminding us, do the opposite. Smile, look out of your way, encourage someone, say, man, you're doing a great job. Wow, they're getting so big. I sure love your family. Hey, it's great to see you. I admire the work you do to bring your children towards a life of faith. I'm pulling for you. Encourage them with what you say. Number three, listen to them. Listen to them. This is a big idea. Listening's hard. Some of you struggle every Sunday morning. Listen to them. It's funny because listening is tricky because sometimes we don't, when I say listen, I mean listen without judgment or listening without trying to fix. Okay? Some of us, when we listen, we just want to fix. Nothing wrong with fixing, but sometimes that's not what we're listening for. And this might be a guy thing more than a girl thing, but it's not universal. It could be both ways, right? And I'm bad at this. Look, I'm going to talk about this. I'm stepping on my own toes here because I'm good at trying to fix. Maybe it's the guy in me or just the fault in me. But it's part of my job. In my defense, my job is to get up here. I speak from God's word. I talk about how to live and how to have faith. And people call me or come by to ask for advice or counsel. So I'm in fix-it mode a lot. But I have to remember that a lot of times no one needs to be fixed. They just need to be heard. Right? And no one wants to be judged ever. They just want to be listened to. So for us fixers, let me just say, some of us, we want to fix because on the good side, we want to help. I care about you. And if this is a hard thing for you, the best thing I can do is fix it. It's sincere, isn't it? Or on the other side, it's like, if I fix it, maybe you'll shut up and stop blabbering about it. And that would be good too. I don't know which one it is. But either way, to learn to just listen and say, I want to hear what you're saying. And I want to listen without judgment in your journey, especially as young parents. I'm here. Oh, I'm sorry. That must be hard. Oh, I get it. I've been there. I know. Hey, I'm listening to them. I said there's four ways to be four people for four four ways to be for these young families during this stage of their life. Pray for them, encourage them, listen to them. And number four, lend a hand. Ooh, don't do that. That's not what I mean. Lend a hand. That could be a lot of things. Outside the church, that could be saying, hey, you're swamped at this stage of life. I've been there. I can fix screen doors. You need help, I'll fix your screen door. Or it could be, hey, give us your child. The two of you go out and have a date so you can figure out why you like each other at one time. And we'll watch. Or you're a single parent. Give us your children. You can go have some quiet time to be alone, not hiding in the bathroom with fingers under the door. You could actually go be alone somewhere. So, you know, I can lend a hand. Or inside the church. And by the way, I'm going to just take a minute here to talk about how you can lend a hand to young families inside the church. There's a few ways. That is to do things to serve families inside the church. Can I give you two of them that will be cause some of us to groan? Volunteer to work the nursery rotation. Yay. And kids ministry. These are big ways we can lend a hand to families inside the church. So how does that help? Are you kidding me? Do you know what it's nice sometimes for parents to be able to come to church and be able to hand their child, their baby off, or their toddler off to a vetted, background-checked, capable person in a nursery? They can go inside and sit down in a chair. And that person can suffer for an hour or so with the children, so that parent can, who's been there 24/7, can sit in a room and be an adult for a minute and listen to a message and be spiritually fed and hear the music and hear the message and have a spiritual moment for themselves because people are watching their kids, but no one could do that all the time, so a bunch of us take turns rotating. Whew, that's a big help to young families. That's a big help to a mom or dad. So is kids ministry. So the kids can go in a space where, so mom and dad aren't sitting there in church, or mom's not sitting there in church the whole time saying, hey, you two, stop fighting, stop fighting, stop fighting. Or, you know, whatever. They can actually go away from my boring lecture, my boring talk. They can go into a room where it's more interesting, their age and games and crafts and music and learning on their level. And the adults can have some adult time learning about their faith and increasing their faith. So it helps. And by the way, ministry to the kids and ministry to the nursery are both challenging in different ways. For the kids' ministry, it's challenging because it's pretty much an every week commitment for a season because we like to keep consistency there. So the people who work kids' program in our church, they come to two services almost every week so that they have church for themselves. So last hour, a bunch of people were in here sitting through the service because this hour they're working with kids. That's a commitment. The reward is they're talking with kids who are there, who are, they can feed back to them, and it's just, it's a real rewarding thing. And I love it when I see men work with kids. Maybe I'm male biased, I don't know, but I obviously see men work with kids and women, but here's why. When I see a man sitting down at a little table in a little chair with little kids pouring into them, or sitting on the ground crisscross applesauce, you know, talk and sharing the stories and listening and teaching a lesson and doing a craft and all that kind of stuff, that just blesses my heart. And if you're a teenager or you're a young adult or you're a middle-aged adult or you're a retired adult who has a little more time to volunteer to help with kids or to help with the nursery rotation, now the nursery's harder in different ways. The bad part is the kids aren't as responsive as the older ones. They cry and they have messy diapers. But the good part of nursery is we only ask people to do it about once every month, like one service about once a month if we have enough volunteers. And we get some, honestly, these are the hardest ministries we staff. I get volunteers for everything else, but nursery and kids program is pulling teeth. And that's because we get a little momentum and then people fall off, and that's okay to fall off. No one's in a life sentence to do something. But we have to keep pushing the reset button. We could use help because if enough people do it, many hands make light work, and we serve the young families that way. So we could use some help in the nursery rotation. We could use help with kids program. If that touches your heart and wherever you are, let us know, please. Lend a hand in the church, lend a hand outside the church. Can I say something to you? About every other week, on Sunday nights, Debbie and Jens Douglas, who and Kathy and Zach Felposh come here to take our teenagers, our youth, young people, whatever term you use, our young people, to spend time with them and have a youth program every other week, roughly. And you saw them. They have young families. Debbie and Jens are up here with their fourth little one. They got a whole brood right there. Kathy Felposh is ready to pop any day now with number three. And I'm just saying, you know, and that they're here pouring into our teenagers because they're lending a hand. And you know what we can do? We can lend a hand too. Nursery, kids programs, outside the walls of the church. Let's help each other. Let's share each other's burdens. You know why? Share each other's burdens because it takes a village. It takes a church. It takes a community. It takes support. Ultimately, be a reason they're happy they come, right? Now, I'm going to land this plane soon. Before I do, I want to say a couple things before I land the plane. Parents, let me just say something to you, especially younger parents, because this is harder when you're an older parent to hear this, in case it feels more on the nose. So young parents, while you're just getting started or in the early stages, a couple thoughts for you. Mom and dad, be a reason your kids are happy they come. As kids get older, sometimes it's easy to hit a stage of life where they don't always maybe feel like going to church, maybe middle school or high school, they get like, I don't want to go. I'll say this. I grew up in church, and I didn't have that sensation because I didn't know it was an option. Like, my parents were like, you're going to church. I didn't know I had an option to not want to go, so I didn't think about it. And that's a good thing, by the way. This is maybe a rabbit trail, but I think it's a good thing that we say to our kids, we're going to church, not because we feel like it. And here's why. Because that's all of life. My parents, when I was growing up, told me to take a bath when I didn't want to. Take a shower. I don't want to. We'll take one anyhow. Use soap. I don't want to. Use it anyhow. Go to school. I don't want to. You're going anyhow. And I think that's good. And same with church, because we're teaching character to say to our kids, if something's important, you prioritize it when you want to, when you don't. Because when you're an adult someday, you got to go to work whether you want to or don't. You know, it's just part of life. And so if you value something, then you just say, we do it because it's important, and we do it when we want to, and we do it when we don't want to. I think that's the best way to raise a family. Personally, that's my two cents. But help them want to by not being so negative. If you're always like, oh, the church, and I don't like the musicians, I don't like the pastor, I don't like the youth worker, I don't like the people across the road, they irritate me. And they're like, why do we go? You don't even like it there, you know? So be happy yourself and be engaging your faith and maybe make it a fun day. I didn't do a very good job of this, but looking back, I should have made Sunday afternoon lunch out or ice cream after church or something to tag some good with the rest of it. But I'm just saying, make it a reason. Make your kids happy they come. Mom and dad, listen carefully. You need more voices in your child's life. You know this. I'm not preaching to you something. I'm not scolding. I'm just saying, you know and I know, I need more voices in our children's lives. Because at some point, our kids get older and they tend to pull away from us a little bit. They're trying to find their own way towards teenagers and adulthood and think for themselves. And before you get, what? They're going to do what to me? The same thing you did to your parents. It's just putting that out there. They're going to be their own people. And at some point, other people might have their ear more than you do, and that's a good thing. That's why we never want to discourage that. We want to get people around our family. So I've been doing this for a long time. I always cringe when I see adults in my stage of life as a parent get insecure about other people who influence their child. They're like, Mom, Dad, guess what my coach said or my youth worker said? And they're like, well, I've been saying that for 10 years to you, you know? And they're like, jealous, you know? And so they tear them down. They're like, well, they're not God. They're not perfect. And then later on, when the child's not listening because they're going through their own stage or they're a young adult, then the parent is all of a sudden going, well, you should listen to, if you won't listen to me, listen to them. And they're like, why? They're not God. You told me that. Be very careful that we are always like, listen, I want people. I, as a dad, want people to speak into my children's life. I thank God for other people who may not say exactly what I'd say, but are positive role models in my children's lives. And several of you all over this room have been at school and at church and all sorts of places. And I'm grateful. I was pointing to Steve Gustas back here. But putting all to all of you in church, growing up, teaching Sunday school to my kids, youth workers, Debbie, and so many people, right? Anyhow, we can go on. So, be a reason they're happy they come. And then I'm going to close with this thought, then we'll re-see our verse and we're done. To everyone here today, be a reason the young people are happy they come. Those four things we said earlier, pray for them, encourage them, listen to them, lend a hand, is for the parents and for the young people. Be a reason the young people are happy they come. That means elementary school age. That means middle school. That means high school. Listen, young people would love for other people to be for them, especially older people. I always cringe in culture when I see the generation wars. And I don't always see that here, but I see it in culture. People are picking at, you know, each other. Young people don't like old people. People don't like young people. And I cringe. I'm like, what? And here's what I always think. The older people are supposed to be the example. We're supposed to be the mature ones. I always cringe when older people are like, kids these days. They make stupid choices. So did we. Come on, guys. So did we. Let's not rewrite history. You know? Well, then the kids and their participation trophies. We gave them to them, okay? I'm just saying they don't have a, you know, regardless, like it's a rabbit trail. Point is that I always cringe when I see older people who are not, who are curmudgeon-y. We got to fight that beast. Be a reason you're happy at all ages, that families come, that kids come, and be happy to see them. Kids want to know, and young people want to know that people are for them, that people are happy that they exist, that they are happy that they're here, that they can smile. They often make a comment about their weird hairstyle or their goofy wardrobe. Oh, I see you're wearing that thing, yada, yada, yada. I was just being tongue-in-cheek, were you? Or is that a little passive-aggressive, you know? Just be for people. Just like, hey, I like you. I like the ladies who always bring candy for the little kids in the church, and the kids run up to that lady and say, has a purse full of candy. Or the men who walk over to a young person and say, hey, how is your week? I know your name. I'm checking on you. I'm talking to you. Care for each other. That would mean a lot to most parents. That would mean a lot to most young people if we would care about each other and ultimately be for each other. Because Paul said in Galatians 6:2, as I wrap up, he said, share each other's burdens, and in this way, obey the law of Christ. That law of Christ is a reference to that upper room when Jesus was about to go to the cross, and he said to his disciples, I'm going to give you a brand new command. Now, he wasn't adding a new law to the old law. In fact, it's very clear that those things were passing away. All things were being made new. It was an old covenant. Very clear in the Christian writings that the scriptures tell us that those things are obsolete. Jesus wasn't adding more law. He was giving them a new thing. This is a new covenant. This is a new day, a new commission, a new command going forward if you follow me. Here's the new command, he said. Love one another as I have loved you. And then he said, by this all people will know that you're my followers if you love one another. And so today as I wrap this up, I want to remind you that if you struggle to be for others and be for one another, maybe the starting point for you is to accept by faith that God is for you. That God is for you. That you are loved. And the love of Christ should be the balm that guides us. If we can live under the light and the faith that we are loved by God, it's the gospel or the good news. God so loved the world that he gave his son. John, who was closest to Jesus, said in his summary, God is love. And if we experience God's love for us, we know that he's there and that he cares. We can see the way he serves us, the way that he encourages us, listens to us when we pray, and lends a hand to us. And he cares about us, and we can turn around and pass that love that we receive, rest in his love, and pass it on to each other. Even though we're different, because God did it for us when we were different, when he didn't agree with all the things we thought or how we always acted or the messes that we made, but he just loved us anyway. And when we do that for others, because God did it for us, we're starting to figure out the gospel and we're starting to figure out the church. So it takes a church, it takes a community, it takes a village. Let's share each other's burdens. Let's obey the law of Christ who loves us all.